following program is a PodcastOne.com production.
He's a world champion wrestler, best-selling author, actor, and lead singer of Fozzy. Now he's rocking the podcast world.
Marvelous.
This is Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, starring Chris Jericho.
Welcome to Talk is Jericho, the pot of thunder and rock and roll. The People's Podcast has arrived. The remedy for boredom is here. Let's go for a ride. Woo! Blast from El Pastola! Working for the weekend, even though it's Wednesday, the weekend is still coming. Hey, listen, every day is a weekend when you're listening to Talk is Jericho, right? Yeah, boy! Today, huge guest, one of the biggest A-listers we've had on this show, William Shatner, is going to be here. Do I have to even say who he is? Captain James T. Kirk, T.J. Hooker, Denny Crane, the star of Kingdom of the Spiders. I mean, come on. He's done it all. And this is one conversation you don't want to miss. 50 years of show business experience, maybe even 60 years. And we cover everything. We cover it all, including the screening of Shatner's World. It's his one-man show, and it's going to be live in theaters on Thursday, April 24th. Go to shatnersworld.com to get your tickets. You don't want to miss it. I'm not kidding. We're talking about everything today with William, with old Billy. UFOs, ghosts, the original Star Trek show, the Star Trek movies, and of course, Shatner's love of the WWE. He's a big wrestling fan. He actually inducted Jerry Lawler into the WWE Hall of Fame and got completely booed. You remember that? Bill talks all about it. We've got all the stories from William Shatner. It's going to be so fruit. Trust me, I had a blast talking to Bill. One of my favorite interviews I've ever done. And if that's not enough, when Bill is finished, I've got the world premiere of the new Fozzy single, Lights Go Out. You are going to hear it right here first. It's completely new, not like anything we've ever done before, but I think you're going to dig it. You definitely don't want to miss it, Fozzyholics everywhere. But before we get started, have you checked out the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at PodcastOne.com? It would be a huge help, a favor to Y2J if you could go give it a look. You'll find all of my sexy beast sponsors there. You can give them all a little bit of love because they're the reason I get to do this for you for free twice a week, right? You'll also find the Amazon links there. That's the easiest way to support the show. Because now we have links not only for the United States, but for Amazon UK and Amazon Canada as well. So everybody can join the party. So once again, please go to podcastone.com. Click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page. Then click on Talk is Jericho to find all my great sponsors. Now here's an idea. Bookmark it so you can get to it easy. Do it now. Bookmark it so you can get to it easy. You lady boys. You sissy man. And hey, in all seriousness, thank you for supporting the show and for supporting my sponsors. Check it out. Do me a favor. Do me a solid because I love doing this show. I love doing this show. Click another time on my sponsors, baby. I love doing the show. Click one more time and dance with me. Yeah, there you go. Special song just for you. I want to keep doing it for you for free twice a week. So click on the Keep Our Podcast Free banner now. All right. So today, like I said, we're going to play the new Fozzy song, Lights Go Out, after William Shatner's killer interview. It's funny because we've been doing this for so long with Fozzy that to me, our name is just our name. And still sometimes when they say, what's the name of your band? I say Fozzy, they'll be like, what? Like a Muppet? And it's interesting because we got that name because we started as a cover band. We were called Fozzy Osbourne. And the band got together when I was in WCW still, back in 99. That's how long we've been doing this. And I met Rich Ward backstage at a show in San Antonio. And then I met him again in Greenburn, South Carolina. And he was in a band called Stuck Mojo, and they were doing some stuff for Diamond Dallas Page. They did a song called Rising, where they had Page in the video. It's a really cool song. If you haven't heard it, go check it out on YouTube. The video is cool, too. Diamond Dallas Page is in it. Raven, Billy Kidman, the whole flock was in there for the Stuck Mojo video. And he was telling me that he had a cover band in Atlanta called Fozzy Osbourne. And just whoever was in town, they would do covers of their favorite tunes, 80s rock tunes or whatever it was, 90s rock tunes. And I had been thinking at that point in time about putting together a band. I actually even had started jamming with some friends of mine in Winnipeg and was going to put together kind of a cover band to do some touring because I really wanted to get back into music and get more into it. Because anyone knows my story, it's the old cliche Jericho statement that when I first started, when I was a kid, I wanted to be in a rock band and I wanted to be a wrestler. Those are my two dreams. And I always kind of focused my life on those two things. So wrestling took off first, but I still always continued to do demos and write songs. And I was in a band called Great Caesar's Ghost. And I was in another band called Blackstone Menace, another band called Mr. Filthy. And all these bands were in the 90s after I started wrestling. So I got together with Rich and he was saying, next time you're in Atlanta, come hang out and, you can jam with us. Lo and behold, fast forward a couple months later, I'm in a match with Scott Steiner in Las Vegas. I twist my ankle, sprain it really bad, can't really walk on it, so they give me like 2 months off. And at this point in time, I was kind of a lame duck because I was already leaving to go to the WWE. So it was like the last 4 months that I had in WCW, they didn't punish me by making me lose on TV or anything like that. They just took me off TV and I just worked house shows. At that point, I got hurt and I didn't work at all. So I called Rich up and I'm like, dude, I'm off, I'm available. Why don't we put together some Fozzy Osbourne gigs, which we did. Played one show. Our first show ever was in Marietta, Georgia, at a place called The Hangar. The other one was at a place, I think in Greenville or something like that, South Carolina. It's called like the 10th Street Pub or something. And I remember this. There was posters up for Fozzy Osbourne, and there was a guy that drove down from Florida and got so angry when he realized that it was not Ozzy Osbourne, that it was Fozzy Osbourne. Like, damn, I came down here to see Ozzy Osbourne. It's like, you came to the 10th Street Pub expecting to see Ozzy? Like, probably not going to happen. So we did those two shows. And then after that, there was kind of a buzz about this band because of Chris Jericho was involved and Rich Ward and Frank Fonseri, actually, from Stuck Mojo, who was really big at the time. They had a really big following. And, of course, I had a following from my WCW days. And there was kind of a bidding war for Fozzy Osbourne right off the bat. Sight unseen, sound unheard. So we got a record deal with Megaforce Records, which was the label that signed Metallica and Anthrax and Raven back in the early 80s. So it was a pretty prestigious label. And we thought, well, we can't call ourselves Fozzy Osbourne. So we just dropped the Osbourne and became Fozzy. And at first we were playing a lot of covers and it was just kind of more of a hobby. And then after our first couple records, we decided to do all of our own original stuff. And then we said, do we change the name of Fozzy or do we keep it? And we thought, well, we've already got some steam behind it, so let's keep the name Fozzy. So here we are, 15 years later, and we're Fozzy, and it's just our name. But some people still think it's kind of weird. So it got me kind of thinking, like, let's think of some other weird names. That are so popular that you just accept them and you don't even think twice. But think about Kiss. Like, okay, my band's name is Hug. You're like, that doesn't make sense. It's dumb. But same with Kiss, but Kiss is Kiss, after all these years. How about Metallica? Think of that name for when you first hear it. Like, what? Like Metallica? Like, what is that? Halloween. It's not Halloween, it's Halloween. Limp Bizkit. What does that even mean? Duran Duran. Like, what? Here's a good one. Def Leppard. Okay, like everyone, Def Leppard, man, Def Leppard, Leppard. Just think about that name, like what it really means, like phonetically, okay, a Def Leppard. Like my band's name is Sick Cougar. It's kind of the same thing, right? Like you don't even think about it because they've been around so long and they're just part of the cultural experience. Let's go to the biggest band of all time, the Beatles. You know, my band's name is the June Bugs. you know, like the grasshoppers. So, you know, the black-eyed peas, the red hot chili peppers. What do you think of that one? Right? Like when you really honestly think about it, it's like, wow, there's some pretty bad names out there. You almost want like, you know, there's only so many cool names. Like, okay, Anthrax is great. Slayer's great. Slipknot, great band. Korn, are you kidding me? Korn? That could be the worst big name band ever. Like, I'm going to start a band called Carrot and spell it with a K. You know what I mean? So, the Bee Gees, ABBA, like, name almost any band, and you'll see that, like, there's, like, some pretty weird names. So, like, Fozzy's not that bad. It's just a name. I think my all-time weirdest one has to be either Def Leppard or Limp Bizkit. I'm still not sure exactly what a Limp Bizkit. Pearl Jam. Think about that name for a second. Nirvana, good name. Pearl Jam, not such a great name. Never knew what it meant. The rumor was that, Jeff Ament's grandma makes a great jam. Like she makes, that's her family jam. But I heard that Pearl Jam actually means like semen. And when you think about it, okay, that makes sense, right? It's like a jam. It's kind of pearl colored. So there you go. So now I'm actually Googling right now to see if I can find some more weird band names. Strawberry Alarm Clock. That's a band name. I can't even say this one, but I will see if it can make the censors. Anal Cunt. What? How about Barbara's Bush? The Bare Naked Ladies. There's one. I mean, come on, man. You think of that, like, just kind of on its own. 24/7 Spies. Toad the Wet Sprocket. The Blow Monkeys. Hootie and the Blowfish. That's a bad one. Hootie and the Blowfish. The Butthole Surfers. Like, imagine if you were like, what's your name of your band? Butthole Surfers. Like, what? What? Butt Trumpet. Here's a good one. Chewbacca Plaid Cock. Could be Circle Jerks. I've heard of them before. The Cunning Runs. What does it even mean? Cycle Sluts from Hell. Dumpy's Rusty Nuts. Like, all these are bands. Dayglo Abortions. Dead Kennedys. Dead Milkmen. You can see, like, the list of bad band names. I should Google good band names because there's not a lot of them. I'll tell you that right now. The Jenna Torturers. The Hard-Ons. Well, that's pretty obvious. The Head Lice. The Meat Puppets. That was a good one. Then I found that's a penis. I Wrestled a Bear Once. Job for a Cowboy. These are all actual real band names, by the way, that you can listen to on iTunes. Pissing Razors. REO Speedwagon. Queen, for a band that's not gay. Well, we said it's Freddie Mercury, but Queen. So yeah, you can see like there's a lot of bands that don't really make a lot of sense, but they're great bands. And after a while, the legend of them just kind of follows on. Ugly Kid Joe, there's another one. So yeah, so that's kind of how the whole Fozzy story started. And here we are, you know, like I said, 15 years later. And sometimes I wish that I would have called the band like Jericho. Jericho's Army. Phoenix Fire. We could have been Phoenix Fire. But now Fozzy, it's a great name. It's easy to chant. Stands out. And you still get the dummies. Is that a Muppet? Waka, waka, waka. Okay, I get it. Yeah, sure, fine, whatever. But after 15 years, I don't even notice it anymore. It's the name of our band. And our band rocks, as you will be able to hear when we play Lights Go Out, the new single from Fozzy. You're getting to hear it here first. And I'm really curious to hear your thoughts. Make sure you hit us up on the Twitter at Fozzy Rock or at Talk Is Jericho. And let me know what you think about the new Foz. Okay, we've got William Shatner coming up, but first,
Talk Is Jericho.
All right, sitting across from me right now, one of the heroes of many people's childhoods and adulthoods too, I'm sure.
Old age. A couple of seniors out there.
William Shatner is here, and what a pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. We've seen each other at appearances
a few times.
Really had a chance to talk, so
I know
I'm relishing this opportunity.
It's funny because we originally met, I believe, at the Golden Gods, which was a heavy metal award show.
Oh, that's right.
Remember that?
I was getting an award.
I was giving an award. I think you got one or gave one for being like a headbanger award.
Yeah.
And you went on stage and you're like, let me hear you effing scream. And people were just like, ah. And I remember you came back afterwards. You said to your publicist, I bet you wish you didn't book me on this one.
We were seated at the same table as Metallica. There I was, you know, the private Canadian.
Yeah, but backstage, there was a lineup of people. Like, all the rock dudes were waiting to take a picture with you.
And the question was, what are you doing here?
I love the fact we're here at the Podcast One Studios here in Beverly Hills. And I was mentioning that you came in here by yourself, which is super refreshing because usually people come in with their entourages or their assistants, but you just walked in. It was very refreshing to see.
Well, that's too bad. It's a jaundiced view of Hollywood. You need people to help you do things.
Mm-hmm.
I have a wonderful assistant that keeps me appointments, and she has some wonderful ideas about things that I'm trying to invent, and she'll have an opinion on, mm-hmm. and I cherish them. But that's about it, you know. An assistant to help you with your schedule.
Well, sure.
But I don't know the other things. The people that precede and postcede you and the guards they have for us.
Well, you've been doing this for so long, too. I'm sure you're kind of the trappings and the success part where you have to act like a star. You're probably over that years and years and years ago.
I don't even know what that means anymore. Do you?
Yeah. No. And here's what I was going to tell you. I did we set this up at the St. Louis Comic Con a couple weeks ago. And I did that. And this is a true story. I did that Comic Con. I agreed to do the booking to maybe possibly get a chance to run into you to ask
kidding.
You. I'm serious, because you and I have been tweeting each other back and forth, and we're busting each other's balls, making jokes and insults. And I'm like, this guy is so funny. Like, I was watching Kingdom of the Spiders a couple months ago, and I just tweeted watching Kingdom of the Spiders, and William Shatner was amazing, and it was the best movie. And you just tweeted back, oh, that's so precious. And I was like, I don't even know what that means, precious.
Nor do I. You know, the fewest words possible. But it's time that we spoke, and I was curious about you. I mean, you know, the effort, the discipline that mm-hmm. takes to be an athlete and to stay in shape, mm-hmm. and then to overcome being hurt. And there's a whole area of being an athlete and then being a performer.
Mm-hmm.
I had an occasional talk to Jesse Ventura.
Yeah.
You know who he is.
Absolutely.
He was in the Army. He was a Green Beret.
He was a SEAL, I think. Navy SEAL.
He was a SEAL.
Something like that.
Yeah. He was a SEAL. Then he was a wrestler.
Mm-hmm.
And then he became a politician.
Mm-hmm.
And he's...
And an actor.
And an actor.
Right.
And he's, you know, a rank guy. I want to be... Leave me alone. Let the government leave me alone. And I just leave it. He's got a real attitude, but that soldier philosopher idea, the idea of military discipline,
mm-hmm.
or an athlete's discipline, and then to be able to talk about what's good and what's bad in a variety of areas, that takes an unusual human being.
It's something that you've always done throughout your career, and I've done it too. It's like you said, you started... Let's be like, you know, the first thing was like, okay, Star Trek, Captain Kirk, kind of got branded as that, and then kind of had to rebuild yourself, and then you branded yourself in all these different areas, whether it be acting or, you know, Broadway or singing, the albums that you've made. You're building the William Shatner brand.
See, I hear that a lot. You know, I hear the term, whether it's applied to me or other people, reinventing yourself,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
or branding yourself. And I don't understand the concepts.
Hmm.
I mean, do people make decisions based on, oh, no, that's not my brand?
Mm-hmm.
Because what is your brand? And does that mean you're personality? Does that mean your persona? But you're constantly changing. You're evolving. Mm-hmm. You got this show. You're going to make appearances. You're going to get another job. And, mm-hmm. and your relationships with in your personal life change and evolve or destroy. Yeah. And you're... And your cells, every 7 years, you got a new body. So you're evolving. Mm-hmm. Inadvertently, you're evolving. Advertently, if you choose, boy, I better read this book and get with that subject because I want to evolve even further. So you're taking a hand on your evolution, but you're changing all the time. So 6 months from now, you're different. Are you rebranding yourself if you choose to do something else? I don't understand the term. For me, it's... Well, I'm curious about that. Mm-hmm. I'm reading a book, two books, on a really colorful character named Johnny Mack. Johnny Mack was a psychiatrist, mm-hmm. And he was a tenured professor at Harvard.
Okay.
And he was a Pulitzer Prize winner. He mm-hmm. wrote a book on Lawrence of Arabia that won a Pulitzer Prize.
Mm-hmm.
Brain, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, an intellectual.
Right.
Psychiatrist, Harvard, Pulitzer Prize
winner.
So a friend of his brings him some cases that the friend is working on of people who thought they were abducted by UFOs or said they were abducted.
Yeah.
And this friend says to Johnny Mack, take a couple of cases. I got so many. Will you take a couple of cases for me? And Johnny Mack says, okay. 200 cases later, he comes to the conclusion that these people were telling the truth.
Hmm.
And he now says UFOs exist. And now Harvard says, wait a minute, we have to relieve you of your tenure. Turns out that the president of Harvard saved him. But there was a whole movement afoot. He loses in divorce his wife and children.
Hmm.
And then the finale of that is he steps out of his house and is hit by a hit-and-run driver and is killed. But the point is, he changed his mind about UFOs. That UFOs to this intellect existed.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm reading this book, and I've always scoffed at you. Well, what are they doing? You know, why are they flitting across the sky and landing in a Florida swamp?
Yeah.
You know, why don't they land on the...
Near the White House. Yeah.
How about on the White House?
Yeah. On the top of it.
Right. How about going just beaming into the
Oval Office.
Right. You know, yeah, they can do all that. So... I'm reading this, and his conclusion was that UFOs are evidence of another dimension. Now, when we, in our recent discovery of microphysics, mm-hmm. looking at the smallest things, and we discover that the observation of the object might bring it into existence, and when you stop observing it, it goes out of existence. They've now proven that by the very act of observing a phenomena like a proton of light, you bring it
to
manifest itself, and then when you stop, it stops manifesting. It may wink in and out of existence.
Hmm.
Okay, that's the mystery. That's one teeny aspect of a mystery we're talking about. So why wouldn't a UFO in another dimension, why couldn't that be a manifestation of another dimension, another universe?
Mm-hmm.
We're already discovering, hey, there may be 11 universes. I don't know why they say 11, but there may be many other universes. Maybe this infinite number of universes. We certainly can't be so callow to think that...
Absolutely.
That we're the only one, or that the
yes.
light... traveling at whatever it is, hundreds of thousands of miles a second, is the only denomination, so that 13.5 billion years from now, that was the beginning of the universe. Mm-hmm. So there's this mystery that's abound. All this is by telling you that when you sort of try to comprehend this kind of information, you're evolving.
Mm-hmm.
So is that rebranding, or are you just evolving, interested into a new subject?
Do you believe that UFOs exist?
Well, see, now that...
Now with this new information.
Well, with this new information, you have to say, well, what do you mean exist?
Yeah.
You see, and it leads to the mystery.
We had a ghost hunter on the show, we as in me, yeah. And he said that...
I love the me, though. Yeah. I love the we,
yeah.
Because that's the entourage.
Yes, exactly. I'm my own entourage.
Right.
Well, Stacy helps me.
Stacy and somebody else.
But he was saying that a lot of people theorize, like ghost experts, that ghosts are actually pictures from another dimension that kind of break through.
We're talking about the same thing.
Explains a lot of different things,
yeah,
right?
Well, yes and no. Mm-hmm. Ghosts could also be dreams in your own head.
Well, yeah.
Or
too much vodka on
Saturday
night.
Too much vodka. Or there is a phenomena where you think you're asleep, but you think you're awake, but you're
actually asleep. Yeah. Well, I think we were talking about what I meant by rebranding. That's kind of the term that they use now. The longevity, the career that you've had in show business since the 50s, leading up to 40s maybe even, up until now. I mean, not a lot of guys can say or girls can say they have that type of longevity. And that's one of the reasons why we're talking today is you actually have a movie, Shatner's World, coming to theaters April 24th. And this is a one-man show that you performed on Broadway, and now it's on screen.
So here's this wonderful advance in electronics. If you will. Mm-hmm. Look, you and I are talking on a podcast.
Right.
Right? And this podcast goes on.
Worldwide.
But is it broadcast now, or is it being put on?
We're recording it now, and it'll be on next week on iTunes, on podcast1.com.
So you can buy it on iTunes.
Oh, it's free.
Oh, it's free for iTunes.
Free. Okay. And what happens is, the thing that's so cool about podcasting is that it lasts forever, and it's worldwide. So our show airs next week, but 10 years from now, people can still go back and listen
exists.
To it. Whereas if it's a radio interview, it's
gone.
So it's
even more complex.
Yes.
Exactly. So here's a whole new thing.
Mm-hmm. Whole
podcast.
Medium.
Who ever heard of a podcast?
Yeah.
Up until what, this year or last
over
year?
The last couple of years,
last
but you're very,
years.
Very new, though.
Very new.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole idea of putting it on iTunes and,
yes.
and getting it downloaded and mm-hmm. then going across the world, all that is new stuff.
Yeah.
So I did... I was asked to do a one-man show in Australia, and I did it there, and it was very successful. I toured Australia. Then I did a version of it in Canada. I toured Canada. And then Broadway said, we'd bring it to Broadway. So I rewrote it and redirected it. And
this is you just telling stories about your career.
Well,
and your
yes.
life.
It's me casting a spell, mm-hmm. an actor's spell over an audience. And generally it's... It works, and from 2 minutes in, you can hear them start to listen, and then they never stir, and then they stand and applaud at the end of an hour and a half, 2 hours. And it is the magic of the theater that takes place that was what I was born to do. Mm-hmm. That was what that's what I did and do. So I went to New York and opened it on Broadway, and it was a big success and lots of good... notices and people loved it. Then I toured about 40 cities
wow.
in the United States this past year, during which time I filmed it.
Mm-hmm.
And I filmed two separate performances, and I had 6-8 cameras on each performance, so a lot of angles. And I now have captured the live show in essence in a movie,
mm-hmm.
which will play simultaneously at 7:30 Thursday night on April 24th in 700 movies across the United States,
mm-hmm.
to which you can buy a ticket if you go to the name of the show, Shatner's World. So if you go to Shatner's World Cinema.com, mm-hmm. you can find out where that movie theater is near you, and you can find out how to buy a ticket. Look at how many new things I've just mentioned. Simultaneous broadcast in 700 theaters across the country. You can buy a ticket by going to a website. You can find out where the theater is to going to a website. You can buy the podcast to find out how to get to the... I mean, the,
yeah.
the numerous new things that are happening in our yours and my mm-hmm, world, mm-hmm. let alone the world of whatever, satellite mm-hmm. Or UFOs.
Hmm.
It's all burgeoning. It's all taking place. There's such a manifestation of invention, and yet where is it going? That sort of thing. I mean, you can't turn around before something new has happened.
Especially for you, but all the stuff that you've seen, like we mentioned, with your long career, is it kind of strange or weird or freaking you out a little bit to see all of these things, and not all of them, but a lot of things that were on Star Trek, for example, that are now real? And the one that I always think about was you looking into the big screen in the bridge and seeing, you know, a Klingon or whatever talking back and forth, and now that's Skype.
Right.
You were basically Skyping right. back in the 60s right. before it existed.
We did a lot of things that have come to fruition.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a perfect example of the adage that, you know, if you can imagine it, we can do it.
Yeah.
It's the most remarkable. They've even, I think I read this last year, they even beamed something from one polarity to another, a molecule. I think a single molecule from one positive post to a negative post. Something was beamed. A molecule was beamed from one point to another point.
Wow.
So if you can do one molecule, eventually, you know, the billions of molecules that we are.
But it's like, you know, this is 1967, 66, 68 yeah. when you're doing this. Lasers talking on the
phone.
On the phone, basically, yeah. up into the sky. Yeah. You yeah. can do that now
and
on a plane.
Motorola stole that or paid for it. I don't know which. The design. And they had a StarTAC phone.
Oh, really?
Years. Yeah, which you flipped open.
Yeah, exactly. That yeah. was exactly it. You flip it open. Now if you have a flip phone, it's like you're living in, like, you know, that's so early 2000s.
That's right. It's so passé.
At the time.
Right.
It was the thing,
if you're
right?
not talking to Siri, you're not talking to anybody.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So what kind of stories are you telling with Shatner's World, on Shatner's World?
Well, you know, name a subject. I talk about...
You talk about your acting experiences,
yeah,
your life experiences.
In some instances, you know, I bring up Star Trek and Boston Legal, which were two popular things. But
mm-hmm.
I bring up Broadway shows, dramatize the Broadway show incidents that happen. I talk about motorcycles. I talk about horses. I talk about music. I talk about comedy, questioning all of it. I have a rolling chair as my prop, and that chair becomes my father, becomes a horse, becomes a motorcycle, becomes a rabbi, becomes a gorilla, a lowland gorilla. I mean, the stories are numerous, and I would do them no justice by telling something to you. But what I can say to you is that at the end of the evening, the audience is entranced, and they've always had a great time. And so if you wanted to go see this show and were wondering about it, I urge you to go see it, you listeners, because I promise you will have a great time.
Mm-hmm.
You may even have a wondrous time.
Well, you have so many stories and so many experiences to talk about. I mean, how is it for you, and I'm sure you've probably embraced this, but you know, you are known and will always be known as Captain James T. Kirk, one of the most iconic characters in pop culture history. Did that ever get on your nerves? When people would be like, hey, Captain Kirk, how you doing, Captain Kirk? Like, do you ever get...
Well, it depends how much sleep I've had. It can get, you know, but I'm totally aware, and the older I've gotten, the more aware I've become,
mm-hmm.
of what they invest in themselves, how the kind of sacrifices they make by coming up to you.
Mm-hmm.
They're shy, they're loath to, they want to, but they can't. They've spent time wondering about, and then they see me, and it, you know, it's like a dream that manifests, that becomes real.
Yeah.
And my God, he puts his pants on like everybody else. So I'm aware of that, I understand mm-hmm. that. And so for the most part, I feel good about it and respond in kind. Sometimes you can't help it.
Mm-hmm.
Something bad has happened and you're short tempered and they get the brunt of it.
And sometimes I've noticed too, just and this is not people on purpose, but sometimes people just have bad manners. They just don't get it.
No,
you know?
they don't treat you like a human being.
Yes,
they presume that you have no feelings and no other time but for them.
Yeah,
and that'll turn them
out. The one always bugged me is when someone would come up from behind and just slap you on the shoulder. Like, ow, I wouldn't go up to somebody I didn't know and just slap them on the shoulder.
That slap on the shoulder. Yeah, I'm glad you mentioned that. That slap on the shoulder, when you and I are standing taking pictures or something like mm-hmm. that, and somebody comes along and whacks you on the shoulder. Hey, man.
Yeah.
Bang. Like you haven't seen 500 people, 250 of whom are whacking you on the shoulder. Yeah. That presumption
yes.
of the whacking the shoulder. You know, part of the amusement, part of the self-knowledge, the knowledge of I'm trying to keep in mind all the time is what is that human being and who are they? And, mm-hmm. Give them their moment in time. Give them my full awareness, I guess is a better way of putting it. So you have to read so many things instantaneously from somebody. You don't have a chance to talk to them, and after an hour you say, oh, that's a nice guy, or I don't like that guy. Mm-hmm. To give yourself time to form an opinion. You have to immediately assess who that person is, sometimes whether they mean you harm. Mm-hmm. Celebrities are generally on their toes emotionally as to what they're facing.
You're right.
And so if somebody slaps you on the shoulder, that could be a signal of a personality that you might want to be aware, you know, be hyper-vigilant about.
Yeah.
You're reading things always into how a person says hello because you haven't got time for an extended conversation.
Well, especially for a guy like yourself or even at times with me, it's like people, like you said, they expect you to be on at all times. You always want to give that person their moment, but it is sometimes like just common courtesy. Please, thank you. That's it. And most people are like that. But sometimes you get the person like, listen, I don't know who you are, but my kid loves you. Sign this.
Right.
And like, okay, let me analyze this. You're asking me for a favor, but you're insulting me at the same time and demeaning me. Like,
I hear variations on that myself. And what they're saying is, I'm not so stupid as to be a hero worshiper.
Yes.
Don't mix me in with somebody who likes you. You know, it's my kid, but I'm here for my. It is kind of insulting. On the other hand, you know, if you could deal with it with humor, I had a mean question. I was I'm coming from another interview mm-hmm. in which I'm promoting this one man show.
April 24th.
The theater's near you. Because the nightmare of the actor is with me.
Uh-huh.
And it isn't something I'm going to wake up from until April 25th, which is I'm giving a party. Is anybody coming?
Is anyone going to show up to this thing? Yeah.
Starring and nobody comes.
Yeah.
So I'm busy promoting while we get the seats filled. and so one of the venues was they would type in questions and I would answer the question. Well, the questions sometimes were cruel.
Mm-hmm.
Why Shatner is a jerk? Why would somebody want to? I'm trying my best to do something. Why would somebody say Shatner? So my point is this: if you deal with it with a sense of humor,
mm-hmm.
if you I've forgotten what I said, but when I was driving towards your interview. Mm-hmm. I was thinking I could have handled that better. Shatner's a jerk. You know, I agree with you. Or
Yeah.
You know, I've
always
just come to that conclusion myself.
So you're just figuring that out
answer.
Now?
Yeah, you just figured that out now. Exactly. Those kind of remarks, that answer, those are the things that stand-up comics have when they get heckled.
Mm-hmm.
They have a series of lines that they can trot out, so you can't beat them because they've pre-thought your heckle.
Yeah.
You know? So if we pre-thought, think these insulting questions, you can come up, even if you don't feel like being funny, the line
still
is funny.
Still got the quip,
You just figure that out now?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Now, did you, I mean, we're talking, like, you know, you and I, at this point in time, we're working together. Like, this is a show, we're putting on a conversation. And to me, you know, as a guy who is a fan of yours, it's cool to know that you're a good guy and we're having fun. Was there anybody that when you first started that you met, that you worked with, that maybe you're intimidated by? Like when you were starting out, who was like the guys? Like,
oh, my God. All those stars. I did a movie with Nuremberg Trial,
mm-hmm.
it was called. And it was about World War II, the end of World War at the end of World War II, they held a trial for the Nazi criminals
mm-hmm.
and found many of them guilty and read what their crimes were. It was it was a very important film at its time. And I played a young lawyer with not many, too many lines.
And this is like in the 50s or something? It's in that time frame.
Late 50s. Yeah. And I played a young lawyer that seated at a trial table. And in front of me came, and being cross-examined by famous stars, I was, you know, one of the peons in the movie.
Yeah.
And there were innumerable major stars of that time. And it's frustrating when people under the age of 25, and I say, you know, Cary Grant, they say, who? Fred Astaire. No,
I was going to say Cary Grant. Right. Was he in that?
No, he wasn't. I'm just trying to think of a name that your audience or you might remember. So there were all kinds, Judy Garland, Cliff, Montgomery Cliff, just to go through the list was enormous. So Spencer Tracy was there, and he was the major. I played his assistant, and Spencer Tracy intimidated him.
Huge
name, yeah. And he did a long, 3 or 4 page speech in one scene, and he talked, and he had all the rhythms and the modulations and the keyed on words, and he it was all him as an actor. Well, I was coming from the stage. I was this Shakespeare actor. I was from Broadway. And I was thinking movie actors don't remember lines. And here was this guy who had a four or five page speech. So I went up to him afterwards and I said, Mr. Tracy, I didn't know that movie actors learn lines. And he gave me a look. And it was hard to talk to him for the rest of the movie. It was that kind of. I was in awe of everybody,
right? But it came out the wrong way, kind of. Yeah,
exactly.
So when you first showed up for this audition for Star Trek, or maybe you were offered the part, I'm not sure. But did you have? Was it just a gig, or did you have an idea that something special was going on, or what was your thoughts about it?
Well, Gene Roddenberry and a group of people had made a pilot called Star Trek, and they went to sell it to NBC, and NBC turned it down. But they said the idea is good enough, recast it. So I was in New York doing something, and Roddenberry called me to come and see the pilot with the idea of...
Did you know him?
No.
Okay.
They wanted me to play the captain. I had been in New York.
Yeah.
No, I had a reputation.
Gotcha.
I was a young actor out of Broadway and live television. I was doing a lot of big stuff and movies and stuff. So they asked me if I would be on it. And I came here to see the pilot. And it was an imaginative pilot. It just lacked certain things, in my opinion. And so I agreed to be on it. So I didn't know anybody, and I had done a pilot a couple of years earlier, which didn't sell. And I thought, goodness, I hope this thing sells, because if it doesn't, and you've gotten two pilots that haven't sold, it's not too good for your reputation.
It's bad on you, yeah.
Bad on you. Somebody might not take another chance. So when it sold, I thought, great, but it lasted 3 years. It got all right notices when it opened. It was in the top 40s.
Ratings
were moderate, mediocre.
Yeah.
At the end of 3 years, they canceled it. So I thought that was it. There was no reason to think it was anything else but a three-year gig.
Right.
That didn't pay very well.
Okay. But also very pioneering, though, that show. I mean, all the different things.
We now think that way.
At the time, nobody,
another sci-fi show, and you know our special effects were primitive, because that time was primitive, but we had no budget, so it was literally a little model ship sailing through
The Tribbles were literally little furry balls
that somebody had made, you know, with with crushed velvet or something. So it was all primitive. What they didn't take into account at that time were that the stories had, many of the stories had universal themes, that it didn't matter whether the walls shook, and it was the actors and the story and the themes that all appealed to people's imagination. So they, you know, a ship wavering, little spaceship wavering through space didn't bother them. They got the idea.
Because it wasn't about that. Right.
You know, the same thing happened in Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
Those stories that they wrote on Twilight Zone were so intriguing that one of them I did was a little guy on the airplane.
That was great. Yeah, Nightmare at 20,000 Feet.
So there's this Czechoslovakian acrobat on a wing of a plane in a little furry suit. The whole thing is so ridiculous that when you describe it, you're like, oh my God, you're not going to play in that, are you?
Yeah.
Nobody talked about the little Czechoslovakian guy. They all talked about, oh boy, if we were meant to fly, we would have wings. And
but it also, too, it wasn't what you saw. It was what you didn't see. It was your performance of the little fleeting glimpses of something.
Exactly.
Right.
So that's exactly right. So it is the truth of the theater and of films for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
With the exceptions coming of late, that it is the material that people will ignore the armament, the special effects,
right, yeah, yeah, the accoutrement.
The accoutrement, perfect. if the story catches their imagination and the actors live for them.
Mm-hmm. And another I was going to mention was you were talking about the special effects not being the most important part. You're talking about Star Trek, mid-60s, late-60s, and you have a kiss with Nichelle Nichols,
yeah.
who is a black actress. Was that one of the first or the first interracial kiss on national TV?
They make a great deal of it. And
was there a blowback at the time?
Well, there was. A few southern stations didn't play it, that segment.
Wow.
But, you know, for me, Nichelle is a...
Oh,
it's a beautiful
hot,
woman,
absolutely,
yeah. And it was a joy to. so I didn't think anything much of it,
mm-hmm.
and it turned out that it was. And people make a big fuss about it now. I don't think we.
So at the time, it wasn't like
it wasn't the biggest deal. No.
Another thing I noticed too about when you were doing your fight scenes, and we've seen this because you have done a lot of stuff with the WWE. You know, Captain Kirk would do a monkey flip, or he'd do head scissors. Were you a wrestling fan?
Yeah. Well, I threw Jerry Lawler out of a ring.
Yeah.
Did I tell you that?
Yeah, I've seen that. You monkey flipped him.
Yeah. I just, of course, we rehearsed it.
Yeah.
And my insight, and then I was there at his. At Jerry Lawler's induction into the
Hall of Fame.
I was there. I gave this like
yeah,
I welcomed
you inducted him.
So, but the terrible thing, the actor's nightmare. I walk out to a wrestling audience, and they're going, "Boo! Get him out of there!" Hey, I'm here to celebrate Jerry Lawler, and they're booing me. It was like a shot, and instead of going off script because I had a speech written,
right.
Instead of forgetting that and saying, hey, wait a minute, guys, I'm with you, you know. Instead of going to the truth, which mm-hmm. is always the best,
yeah.
I fought it, you know, and I started reading faster and louder, trying to stop them. I saw Marlon Brando at a rock and roll concert with Michael Jackson at a Michael Jackson concert in New York. I went to see a Michael Jackson concert, and for some reason, Michael Jackson and Marlon Brando were friends.
Wow.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, a more diverse coupling you'd never find.
Seen, right?
And so between numbers, on comes Marlon Brando, big and bulky, sits in an easy chair, and starts to talk. Yeah, I'm going to tell you about Michael Jackson, and they start to boo him.
Oh.
The greatest actor of the time. They're booing him, and he is as flummoxed as I was at Jerry Lawler's thing. He doesn't know how to handle it, so he did it the same way I did. Now, wait a minute. I'm going, wait a second, and he's screaming at them. And the more he screams, the more they boo. And that's what happened to me at Jerry Lawler. And then, what's his name?
McMahon, Vince.
McMahon says to me afterwards, that's the crowd. They boo.
That's right.
They take you know, you have the villain or the hero, and they boo the villain. It's part of the fun.
That's right.
So if I had incorporated that into my
You could have turned heel and gone villain on them and turned it around on them.
See,
if you would have known.
No, see, I'm evolving and changing. I'm rebranding myself.
Exactly. But were you a wrestling fan though at the time? Because I mean, or either a stuntman was or you were, because there was wrestling moves in Captain Kirk's fights.
Absolutely. I think Roman Greco wrestling. I wrote a book with the character, the leading character, mm-hmm. wasn't armed, Well, he was armed with a sword at times. I mean, this is the future.
Yeah.
His best moves were Roman Greco moves. So he could take a hand and do, you know, take a hand or a leg or a flip. Or and I'm still going to do it. I'm making a comic book of it, and that's still going to be his skill. So I come from Montreal, where professional wrestling, we like to believe, began.
It was big in Montreal.
And all those guys whose names I can't remember, but are legendary.
Rougeau, Gino Brito, those type of guys.
There you go. Yeah. Do you know the history of professional wrestling? Did you study it at all?
Well,
I mean, you look into it?
I know a little bit, but I don't know what you're alluding to.
Well, just that I went to see or was aware of those giant.
Yeah, yeah, the history. I'm characters. From Winnipeg, so I know more about Central Canada, but I know the Eastern Canadian.
So you
Canadian.
Know that in Quebec, Montreal was the wrestling capital,
yes,
at least of
very,
Canada.
Very big.
I don't know about the rest of the
very
world.
Very big, yeah.
But those big, beefy guys. Mm-hmm.
Mad Dog Vachon, the Vachon brothers were all there.
Yeah. French-Canadian wrestlers who stayed and wrestled in Montreal, and we were their fans.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where I began that. Then I studied, you know, a little... here and there, not wrestling, but jiu-jitsu and judo a lot. Judo,
okay.
And then I was always handy, so I would run and jump and cling and I always and to this day in my dotage, in my old age, I still have this. If I was, I can't get hurt because only the stuntman gets hurt.
Yeah.
So I do things that are crazy with this stupid actor's mentality of I'm not going to get hurt because
it's not in the script.
It's not in the script.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Talk is Jericho.
I've got William Shatner sitting right across from me right now, and he's a hot, sexy man right here. And he's in the Talk is Jericho studio with me. He's doing a special live screening of his one-man show, Shatner's World, in theaters this Thursday. Go to shatnersworld.com to find a theater near you and to get tickets. It's one night only. You have to go see this show. Go see the show. You know you want to go. You know you want to go see Shatner's show. So when the original Star Trek ended, was it just another gig for you? I mean, did you have some notoriety as Captain Kirk, or was it easy to find gigs after that?
No, it was, come to think of it, it was difficult. I went into a summer theater, and I directed and produced a play, and I'd tour the summer theaters. Mm-hmm. So I'd do 13, 14 weeks in the summer and earn enough money to get
survive,
by and
survive.
And I had three kids living in Beverly Hills, and I wasn't. It was that sort of thing.
Yeah.
So I was hard up. And when Star Trek ended, I was really, really behind the ball.
So was it basically like when the first Star Trek movie got made, is that when you kind of got back into the groove, or were you working steadily?
No, I worked my way out of it.
Yeah.
I'd never gone without work for any length.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
I've never taken a... an unemployment check, for example.
Yeah. Sabbatical.
Yeah.
But what was the circumstances to, I mean, 11 years later to finally make a Star Trek movie?
What were the circumstances?
Yeah, like why then in 1980 after the show in 1969?
I think the reason was Star Wars came about. There was talk, you know, maybe we'll do another series, maybe we'll do a movie of the week, and then Star Wars hit and it was this big smash.
Mm-hmm.
So Paramount Studios said, well, what do we got? Oh, we got Star Wars. Let's make it into a big movie. So they hired Robert Wise, the great Robert Wise, who was a great director but had never seen Star Trek. He took it because his wife said, oh, Star Trek's very popular. And he didn't know anything about it. And he made this movie called Star Trek the Movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't great. And
it was kind of panned, wasn't it, by the critics?
It was panned unfairly because it's not a bad movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it never had, it was done so late, and they pushed I think it was because it was a Christmas release, and they pushed the date up as quickly as possible. They never really had time to edit it properly.
Mm-hmm.
It was literally brought in, they called it wet. They brought into, we premiered it in Washington, D.C., and it was the print was brought in on an airplane. Like early that evening to be put
straight to the show or straight to the theater.
So there wasn't time to edit, and it was overly long and got panned and didn't do too well. So it was another accident that happened because the head of the studio's wife liked the show. He then said to a gentleman by the name of Harv Bennett, can you make these movies for a better price? And mm-hmm. Harve Benedict was out of television, said, yes, I can.
So it was always was it always planned to be kind of a franchise? Because, like you said, the first one didn't do as good.
No, it didn't do well. A couple of years went by. Mm-hmm. We made the second Star Trek II.
that one was good.
Yeah. And when we did that one, they thought, well, that's it, Star Trek II. And they burned all the sets and, you know, destroyed the or gave it away, the bridge set. And it was that was it. Goodbye, guys. It was nice. It was a great thing. Right? And a year later, they called us back. Star Trek III, they burned the sets. Everyone was the last one. They didn't, and they all made about $100 million. It cost about $30 million to make it, made $100 million. The studio made a little money, and they were happy with that for a while. Then they thought, after six movies, if we get the Next Generation cast, they'll pull more people in. Well, they didn't. But it cost more, so they lost more money. And it wasn't until J.J. got in it.
It's funny how all the even number Star Trek movies are good, and all the odd number ones weren't as good.
Except for Star Trek V. Star Trek V was a brilliant.
Oh yeah, yeah, that was Final Frontier, right?
Yeah, it was brilliant.
You directed that?
Oh, that's right.
That's why it's brilliant.
Oh, of course.
That's exactly. That's actually the best of the series. I believe it's been voted the best in Lithuania. That was voted
right.
the best.
And Lithuania is very important.
Huge fan base there.
Why did you choose Lithuania? Are you Lithuanian?
No,
from Winnipeg.
It's a go-to.
You're from Winnipeg.
It's a go-to.
There's a big Lithuanian population in Winnipeg, isn't there?
Ukrainian.
Ukrainian.
Yeah, Russian.
Because I just gave a speech in Fort McMurray.
Wow.
And that's above Winnipeg.
That's in Alberta, but it's further
but
north.
It's north.
Yes.
And a big Ukrainian population there.
Yes.
And the speech I was delivering was, what is culture? Because this trade school in Fort McMurray had been made into a university, and they had a theater. And they asked me to come up to talk and
bring
give reasons
in.
Why this theater. So I said, what is culture? And I said, don't tell me that the Ukrainian dance isn't culture or that hockey isn't culture.
Yeah.
You know, and I based my speech on that. But I brought in the
Ukrainian people.
Because I knew there was a big settlement north.
There
when
is.
They came over on the boat, they all went to northern Canada.
To the MAC. They call it the MAC, Fort McMurray.
The M-A-T-T?
No, the MAC, M-A-C, Fort McMurray, the nickname for
Mac.
Is the MAC.
Right,
you go to the MAC.
Right.
When you guys first reunited in 1980 after being the whole cast, was it like a band reuniting? Was everybody happy to see each other again?
Yeah, sure.
I mean, because your whole lives have been defined as this crew.
That's true.
You know, your professional lives in a lot of ways.
I was doing other things.
Yeah, of course.
Many other things. I was in two series actually, in those movies.
Yeah.
And but when those movies came around, I really relished it.
Mm-hmm. Some great films.
Yeah.
And got you on the big screen in a big way.
Exactly. And I had the opportunity to direct a big film, which was eye-opening in many ways. I was very... pleased for the experience, as unhappy as it turned out to be.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I wished it had been better, but my life lessons were.
Had you directed?
Oh yeah,
never a major motion picture.
Well, no, but I directed small movies and I directed a lot of television. And
so, how was it for you to be on that side of the camera and also be starring? Like you're starring in
tough
five,
to
and how do
it's
you
tough to act and direct? Well.
How do
you know,
direct yourself?
As a stage actor, you're always... Have you done any stage?
Yeah, I did a play in Toronto, actually.
When?
2006.
So are you... Were you an actor to begin with and then...
Yes, but...
How do you become a wrestler?
Well, here's the thing. It's the same as how do you become an actor, how do you become a musician. I was a fan of it. I grew up in Winnipeg. There was a wrestling school in Calgary.
A
wrestling school.
Here's the move. Here's how you do.
Yeah, exactly.
Were they teaching you real moves, or were they teaching you theatrical
moves? Like the show business part of wrestling.
Right.
But they're real, though. They're like it's like being a stuntman. You mentioned a stuntman earlier.
Right.
Wrestling is a live stunt show.
Right.
You know, like you said, when you work with Lawler,
but
you know what you're going to do.
You know what the stunt's going to be.
Yes, but you're still, sometimes things go awry.
Right.
There's aches and pains and bumps. But the thing about wrestling, though, is you have to connect with the audience. You have to play a character. You have to play a part. You can just go in there and do your moves. It doesn't matter. There has to be a connection.
But had you learned lines and delivered lines with deliberation.
High school plays and stuff like that.
So you were always interested as
always
being an
interested
actor.
In being an actor.
And,
yes.
And but then why go to wrestling where you can hurt your
because
hurt
I
your
just
back?
Wrestling being I wanted to be in a band and I wanted to be a wrestler when I was a kid. Just for whatever reason, those are the two things.
You wanted
that
to
I
be in a band and being a wrestler.
Yeah.
So did you study an instrument?
Yeah, I'm actually in a band to this day. Our band actually does fairly well. We've actually toured with Metallica, so we've made
for goodness sake.
Yeah, we've made it.
But then wrestling seems to be like the exact opposite. You can hurt your fingers.
Well, it's being in front of a crowd, and it's show business. It's like being a vaudevillian actor back from that day. A little bit of everything. You know?
I get it. That's great. I never heard it expressed that way.
Yeah, because when I started, Bill, it was like it was early 90s. The guys were big, 6'8",
yeah.
300 pounds.
Well, what's his
I'm
name?
Not.
The Giant.
Andre the Giant, Hulk Hogan, all those type of guys, Ultimate Warrior. For me, I knew I'd never be the biggest guy in the show, but I could have the biggest personality and the biggest character and have the biggest charisma. And that's what I built my whole career on.
Wow.
And it's the same as singing. I mean, you've made a lot of records. When you're doing your records, you're emoting, you're acting your way through the songs. I mean,
yeah, but I'm trying to I understand the theatricality, the burlesque part of what you're talking about now.
Yeah.
I see. Well, of course, everybody's playing a part.
There's a good guy, there's a bad guy.
Yeah, no, I see it.
Yeah.
And McMahon, in his genius, is pushing everybody to make real scenes. Get out in the parking lot and take an ambulance.
Well,
and, you know.
But the best characters in wrestling are your own personal, your own personality turned up to 11. So that's why the best characters, you know, Stone Cold Steve Austin or...
Well, I was going to mention Stone.
Yeah, I mean, Steve, that's Steve. That's him. Steve is exactly that guy, just turned up to the nth degree. You know, giving the finger, drinking a beer, you know, whatever it is.
Yeah, but then there's this whole history of Steve Austin of quitting and getting and not being the hero. And
That happens too. I mean, I'm sure it happened to you as an actor.
But it's not on camera.
Yes.
You know, as part of the drama.
That's right. I mean, you could make a reality show of what happens behind the scenes in the WWE that would be way more entertaining than some of the shows
themselves. I was on my way to throw Jerry out of the ring, and there was a guy sobbing in a dressing room. I said, why is he crying? And the guy ushering him around says, well, he can't remember one of the moves. He's so frustrated. He's coming out. He doesn't know the script. And he's sobbing.
Well, I mean, and that's exactly, you know.
So go back a moment. So you're now in a play in Toronto.
Yes.
But now you have to have expertise. You have to time your words. You have to, you know.
Yeah.
How did you start to do that?
Well, then I did the same thing that you were talking about, learning the lines. I learned the entire script. Well, as you have to, as a play. I mean, when you're doing a movie, you can learn your
scene. Should do the same thing in a movie.
So yeah, learning the entire script and going through. But my favorite thing about the play was called Opening Night, and it was about a guy who takes his wife to the opening night of a play. And he was a 45-year-old carpet salesman. At the time, I think I was maybe 35 or something. So I grew a mustache. I wore glasses. I put a fat belly in there and slicked my hair back. And the best compliment I got was about 10 minutes in. I heard one guy in the front row say to the other guy, because it was promoted, you know, Chris Jericho stars in opening night. And some guy said to his wife, when is Jericho coming out? And I'd been out there for 10 minutes, but he didn't recognize me, and I had a little voice going on. So, I mean, and that's kind of what wrestling is. It's live. It's a live stunt show. It's like a modern-day morality play. It's a modern-day Shakespearean play.
Right.
So the live element of an actual play is what I'm used to. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's, you know, when you're filming, and that's when you don't have to try this shot and do it this way and try it again. There's only one take in wrestling. There's only one take in the theater. That's a lot of similarities there.
Yeah.
No second chance,
that's
right?
That's really well. I'm pleased to have that information. That's,
yeah. Let's talk about some of about your records. I mean, the famous Shatner style. Like, what made you get into that in the first place?
Well, you know, I was at Stratford for 3 years. I was you could say I was classically trained.
In the arts,
and I was at Stratford. I was at the best Shakespearean company in North America, in the Americas, and rivaling our company could rival in terms of the quality of the production anything in England. And in fact, Stratford at certain points toured England in Shakespeare, like bringing Coles to Newcastle, as I say. So I learned to admire the spoken word, the rhythm of the word, the way a word might. The term is onomatopoeia. The word sounds like what it is, the sparkling brook.
Yeah.
The twinkling of an eye. That twinkling gives you the music. So there came a time when, and I don't sing, and I wanted to sing. I studied. I didn't have time to really train to sing, but I always loved the voice, the miracle of an opera singer, the miracle of those notes, the way that
And also voice. The meter of the lyrics, like you said, that's important too, the twinkling of an eye.
Well, there's the quality of the voice, and then there's the lyric. So it occurred to me at some point, I think on a talk show a long time ago, that I could say the words to that melody, and I won't sing the melody, but when I hear the melody, I know the song. If I catch up to the melody or get a little bit ahead of the melody, let the melody catch up to me, you know, so that I had a sense of the rhythm of it and the lyricism of the words. So if the words were good, I could, I could act the song. The term I always use is you can hear the words, you know, you don't hear the words. What's he saying? So I'm there. I love you. And that begat that. And then I was asked to do an album, and that, you know.
It's a classic.
Yeah.
You know?
And then I got into great musicians like Ben Folds.
Yeah.
And Billy Sherwood.
Yeah,
Of Yes.
Writing you did a song with Zakk Wylde. With Zakk Wylde.
Yeah. And suddenly I'm into really great musicians who are saying, hey, can I be on your album? Of course. And then the idea of saying the words. I'm going to go next week to do Queen Latifah, and she wants me to say one of her songs. And I've got the lyrics. It's great. There's great lyrics. So I'm going to do sort of a rap song, which I've done. I did a rap song with a rapper, forgotten his name, a rap song of Julius Caesar. Of Mark Antony over Julius Caesar's death.
Okay, yeah.
And the title of the song is No Tears for Caesar. And this beautiful artist from downtown wrote these words. Once I explained to him that it was the gang, that this guy was making a speech over the guy he didn't want killed, and he got killed, and the people are all around him, and if he says the wrong thing, they're going to kill him. So he's got to be respectful to his friend, but he can't say too much. And this guy got it, and he started writing the lyrics to this No Tears for Caesar. This great poet wrote these rap songs for me, which is a movie. It was a great experience.
Do you remember when you hosted Raw a couple of years ago and you read out the wrestlers' theme songs?
Oh, yeah.
He was great. Shawn Michaels, like, he's a sexy boy. Sexy boy.
Right.
Rey Mysterio was like, booyaka, booyaka.
That worked, didn't it?
It was hilarious.
It was hilarious.
It was one of the funniest things I've seen. It was so
everybody
good.
Everybody had a great time at it. So I'm aware that people – I did one night – 1 year, I did all the songs in MTV that were the top five songs in MTV. I spoke every song.
Yeah. Okay?
They hired me to do that. I, in fact, had been kicked in the head, in effect, kicked in the head by a horse in the morning.
Oh, wow.
I had concussion. I was out for about 10 minutes, and when I came to, I said, what happened? And I slowly came out of it, and now it's noon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got dirt in my ears from the falling in the dirt, and I'm saying to somebody, I got to be someplace. And I call the assistant. She says, you're supposed to be at MTV. You've got all five songs to do. And I'm an hour out of concussion. I get to the studio. The guy had said earlier, days earlier, what do you need? I said, well, I need somebody to carry the tune. So I need, like, a guitar, and I need rhythm. So I need drums. I need a guitar and rhythm.
Mm-hmm.
When I get there, he's got a xylophone and what do you call the little drums? The
bongos.
The bongos. He's got a xylophone and bongos. And I do I Want to Sex You. That was the year when I Want to Sex You Up.
Color Me Bad.
So I'm doing I Want to Sex You Up. I Want to Sex You Up. And all I've got is xylophones and bongos.
Xylophone.
That was a risk.
You mentioned the J.J. Abrams reboot of the Star Trek franchise. Did you like that movie? The movies? Did you watch them?
Yes, both of them. He has got the magic. J.J. Mm-hmm. Abrams has got the magic of the ride,
mm-hmm.
so that it is slam bang and full of explosions and running and jumping, and some of the characters. It was great. My vision of Star Trek in its smallness and its mm-hmm. small screenness is the story and the character, the development of it. So that's going to come. Right now, he's entrancing the audiences with large box offices, and the actors are wonderful. I think that.
What did you think of Chris Pine?
He's wonderful.
Did you meet him?
Yeah, I interviewed him.
Oh, cool!
In fact, for a documentary I was making, but he's a terrific actor. He's a terrific looking guy, and he's got all the equipment.
Oh, that's right. You made a documentary about all the guys that have played the captain.
Yeah, I've done 10 documentaries. One of them was called "The Captains," in which everybody who played the captains on Star Trek, I examine in.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, yeah.
It's interesting too how JJ he has not only the Star Trek franchise but also now the Star Wars as well. That's insane.
No,
I can't believe they allowed that.
Right. Well, not only did they allow that, what's he going to do for time?
Yeah, you know? Right. I mean,
what happens to his personal life? Because directing is 24 hours, and you're always making decisions, and you're hoping the decisions are right. So he has a great staff based on all those wonderful television shows he did. But ultimately, he's the guy, and to make those two big movies in a short period of time, that's going to be tough.
If he wanted to do something cool, he should cast you in the Star Wars movie.
I know.
Right?
I take him out for sushi every so often.
Put you in a hood and make you a Jedi.
Right.
April 24th at 7:30 at theaters across the country. It's Shatner's World. I think it's going to be amazing. I'm going to go because I've been to a couple of these. It's a one night only.
One night only.
You can only see it this night.
Near you. And as I like to say, the price of a movie ticket, you're going to see a great Broadway show.
Mm-hmm. You get to hear all the experiences of all your career.
You'll be intrigued, I promise you.
What? One last question. When you look back at your career, can you pick out one movie or one role that you had that you just stood out as your favorite?
Well, you know, every moment. You try and achieve nirvana with every moment as an actor. So I can't make that discretion. All I can tell you is I've played this one-man show numerous times now, and I've got to start to relearn the words as I'm going into Las Vegas to do 3 nights in Las Vegas. So I'll have that experience. This is the really meaningful in my life. What I do in that one-man show has a great deal of meaning to me, and I found, I discovered, as strange as it may be to hear, that by performing those stories as though they were just happening, mm-hmm. as though I was just about to tell you this moment and relive the moment honestly and earnestly, is the best way to play it. I'm not just telling you a story.
You're living
I'm reliving the story.
As an actor, you're dropping into the story.
Exactly.
Right.
And that's the way to do it, I discovered.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm performing at my very best in this one-man show.
So great. So great to have you here, Bill. Thank you so much. And April 24th, Shatner's World.
Thank you.
This is Talk is Jericho.
The moment has arrived. Let's give a cowbell roll, please. It's the world premiere of the brand new Fozzie single, Lights Go Out. You can get it April 29th on iTunes. The new record is coming out in July, but this is the tune. So here you go, Fozzie Fanatics Worldwide. Please enjoy our new tune, Lights Go Out.
Just us colliding when the lights go out. We own the buttons when the lights go, lights go.
What did you think? I want to know. Go to at Talk is Jericho, at Fozzy Rock, and let us know your thoughts on Lights Go Out. A little bit different, but I think you'll love it. People that have been listening to this tune have been losing their minds. The record company's going crazy. All my peers are digging it. What did you think? Yay or nay? Let us know on the Twitter. Thank you for listening. And hey, thanks for using my Amazon link every time you do your online shopping. It's really easy to find. Just go to podcastone.com, click on the Keep Our Podcasts Free banner at the top of the page, and then click on Talk is Jericho, and you'll see all three of my Amazon links, UK, US, and Canada. So no matter where you are in those countries, every time you want to buy something from Amazon and you click the banner, they'll kick back a little cash to the show so we can keep doing this for you for free twice a week. This is due to popular demand. I had a lot of our fans in the UK and Canada saying, hey, we want to help your show, Chris. We want to represent you. How can we do it on Amazon? Now you can. Go to the banner, Keep Our Podcasts Free on podcastone.com. Click on it and let the moolah flow, baby. You're just getting your shopping done and helping me out in the process. Thank you so much. And thanks for listening to Talk is Jericho. I know there's hundreds, there's thousands. Actually, as Adam Carolla said last week, hundreds of thousands of podcasts to listen to. And you guys are joining me here. I hope you enjoyed William Shatner, one of my favorite interviews we've done. Got another great one on Friday. Santino Marella from the WWE will be here, and wow, what a story he has. Small town immigrant from Italy coming to the United States and making his fame and fortune. You're not going to want to miss it. Santino Marella then. Until we see you, stay hard, stay hungry. Peace, love, and hugs, and a big yeah, boy.
This has been a Podcast One production. Executive producer Norm Pattis.